He dug his heels cruelly into his courser's flanks before the great stupid beast would go over the edge of the ravine. Loose-packed mud and scree sheeted down the slope into the creek as Elias splashed across. He swept his gaze across the tree-choked semi-darkness. The heart had shrunk to a bare white smudge in the distance. There wasn't time to waste. If he lost the stag as evening fell, there'd be no finding it again. He flicked the reins and ran it down. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off as Hatham and the Spider begin their smear campaign to tarnish Elias's name. Amatha finds out what happened to Hatham all those years ago. As always, if you're not caught up yet, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, so make sure to check that out there. Or you can watch one of the recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, let's get down to the good stuff. I will catch you guys at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum. The sun was burning low and golden through the trees when he heard the first warning notes of cricket song. Elias was grateful for it. The noise would cover the sound of the party's progress through the wood. All day, ever since the master huntsman had led them off the road a league west of Araling, it was as if the very forest held its breath until the dozen men on horseback with their dogs and bows and drinking horns had passed by. White Rose held his breath along with it. He'd always loved a hunt. It was one of the few responsibilities he'd taken on after he'd been tapped by the governor that he accepted enthusiastically. The letters and duties and all the courtly mummery could go rot. But that feeling, when he and his horse were one spirit, and the whole world narrowed to the stag in his sights and the hounds frothing at its heels, it was like sex. Better because your mates got to join the fray. The other horsemen had fanned out a dozen paces from one to the next, all of them watching keenly for any flash of movement against the greens and browns. Cabot and Riley were on his left and right. The last campaign had taught the men-at-arms to think and fight as one man. Up ahead, he could hardly see the huntsman in his mottled leathers, and Elias had to listen close to hear his limer snuffling at the end of its long leash. He ran his thumb across the 2-day stubble on his jaw. He was due for a shave when he got back to camp, and a bath when they returned to the keep. He grimaced at the thought of plunging back into all their silly, courtly intrigue. You couldn't break wind in the keep without the entire court snickering about it behind their hands. Only in his case, they weren't snickering. For nearly a turn, every time Elias walked into the room, the conversation died as every eye turned to White Rose the Black. He wanted to press them on it, to force the accusations out into the open. Damnable slander, that's all it was. Any high lord who found himself believing the filth that some jealous peasant was plastering all over the city for a penny a page deserved whatever mud they slung over his name next. Not that they would dare say anything to his face. They knew he had the governor's ear, and every one of them was too obsessed with currying the old man's favor to speak a bad word about his hand out in the open. But everywhere Elias went, he could see who had read the letters by their sidelong glances when they thought he wasn't looking, by the way the hair on his neck prickled when he had his back to them, and so on. The rumors all came to a head when the last letter found its way onto the old man's desk. He'd gone into the governor's study with his heart racing and stood at attention while the old man's huge eyes flitted back and forth behind thick spectacles. Through the translucent yellow parchment, he could make out his own name stamped backwards across the page. He'd woken up that morning with the letter slid under his door. None of his guards could tell him how it had gotten there. He'd read it a dozen times before tearing it into confetti and flinging it off his balcony over the falls. It began like the others. Elias White Rose is a thief and a traitor. He must be deposed. White Rose has had his eyes set on glory since his childhood, and he has climbed over a hill of bodies to attain it. He has made himself wealthy on the taxes of the city's poor, and he abuses the servants under his care. The serving maids of the keep live in fear of catching his eye. None can refuse him. He uses them like his playthings and casts them aside. He beats his porters and leaves them for dead. How can justice stand when the sword of justice is twisted and bent? White Rose exacts cruelty on the poor, but turns a blind eye to those who line his pockets with gold. Cutthroats and thieves sleep in gilded houses while the poor go cold and hungry. Rapers and bandits rule in the coppers because the governor's hand is soft against them. Every purse stolen, every shop robbed, every man murdered and woman raped, every child who sleeps with an empty belly lies at the feet of Elias White Rose. Every harvest, White Rose goes with his mummer's troop to fight reavers from the south. Every harvest, fields are burned and daughters taken, cattle stolen and sons butchered. Every harvest, White Rose returns with a purse heavy with slaver's gold. He must be stopped. How long before the city's peace is broken when the rot comes from the head? How long before the hinter has been stripped bare by free nation locusts, when the man tasked with protecting them is debauching himself in the gray keep? How long before he turns his eye on the governor's seat and turns his sword against his sovereign lord? Save the city, hang traitors. Vengeance does not sleep. And there at the end, his name that had haunted Elias's nightmares since he came back to the keep. Blackbird. He'd explained the letter away with a mix of half-truths and flattery. His one piece of good fortune in their being pasted all over the keep was that he had plenty of time to hone his rebuttal. It wasn't White Rose the governor had to worry about. It was those filthy, damned low folk who'd already once taken a swipe at him, when Elias had saved the governor's life, as His Excellency surely remembered. In the end, the old man was satisfied, and Elias had been dismissed with a warning to mind how he acted around the servants. He was Famariel's hand, after all, an extension of the governor's person. It was unseemly for that hand to be stroking the backsides of the scullions. If only that had been the end of it. He hadn't called Rowan to his room since the first letter, and he made a point of taking every meal in the great hall alongside the gov. But so long as the slander kept coming, the rumors would keep swirling. It was Kingmaker. Of course it was. Whether or not the Reaper's black soul had been dredged up from the void, there was only one man with the time and the resources and the animus for Elias to be spending devil knew how many crowns splattering mud all over his name. He had half a mind to call for the Grey Man's arrest on the spot. It didn't matter if he couldn't prove it, and, as Shiloh had reminded him, he couldn't leave him to rot for a few 7 years in the jail the way he'd done with his phony Reaper. The best he could do would be a few days in a cell eating bread and water before Elias had to turn Baron Kingmaker loose. It wasn't about that. It was about reminding his enemies that he wouldn't lie down while they kicked him. He knew better than to try anything without consulting Shiloh first. He'd written the merchant 3 times since the letters started without a reply. If he let his passions get the better of him, he was likely to do something that would alienate the brethren or the governor, and probably both. But neither could he keep sitting on his hands. He had to do something to salvage his reputation. Then he heard about the heart. The White Heart was an old woodsman's legend, and depending on who you asked and how much mead they'd had, it was said that the rat could grant wishes, or that a cape made from the stag's bone-white coat could turn a man invisible. It was all nonsense, of course, but the albino appeared only once in a score of ruts. The last man to hunt one in living memory had been the Gov himself when he was not yet 20. All through Elias's Inquisition, the huge yellowing head mounted above the old man's bookcase had glared down at him with glass eyes below a rack almost 3 feet across. If the nails that were holding it up ever came free, White Rose would be one step closer to the old man's seat. So when word came that the heart had been spotted in the woods outside Erreling, 3 hours later, White Rose was mounting up with his men-at-arms, his lords and his servants, long before the sun was up. If the keep was going to whisper behind his back, he'd give them something to whisper about. In the meantime, he'd savor the precious silence the hunt afforded him, far from their lies and looks and letters. A twig snapped just to his left, and his eyes flashed with anger. Gil dipped his bald head with his hands upraised in surrender as Elias raised an urgent finger to his lips. That twice-damned, thick-headed, pig-nosed fool. If he wasn't relying on the silly git to cook his meals and keep his weapons, Elias would have beaten his servant with a switch after he spooked the herd yesterday and sent every deer for half a mile bounding into the hills. Furthermore, after his chastening by the old man, Elias was mindful of every eye in the camp watching to see how he treated the servants under his care. Thankfully, he was spared having to scold him again. At the end of its long leash, the limer sat down and whapped its tail twice against the soft earth. The huntsman turned, his face smeared with mud to better blend him in with the undergrowth, and nodded once to White Rose. Elias's heart hammered. Two of the other servants were on foot, and they dug their heels in to hold back the hunting dogs, three in each hand, that were straining at the end of their leashes. He flicked his reins and moved in alongside the huntsman. The rocky knolls up ahead, whose overgrown sides disappeared into the tree canopy, parted. There it was, like a shaft of moonlight, lapping at the edge of a small pool. It was the biggest stag he'd ever seen, nearly as tall as Elias at the shoulder, with a rack at least a handspan wider than the monster on the old man's wall. The late afternoon sun caught the water and threw dancing tongues of light in blues and greens on the crag behind it. The whole scene could have been plucked from a fairy story and not some ordinary little vale in the interwood a few leagues out from Aerling. Elias was practically salivating. He could already hear the stories the lords would be telling when he rode back in triumph and laid the massive white head at the governor's feet for his blessing. He'd almost written Amitha, asking her to come along for the hunt and compose a ballad for the occasion, but at the last moment he'd burned the letter before sending. She hadn't responded to the last note he'd sent, along with a huge bouquet, apologizing for making an ass of himself outside her little tavern. He knew better than to think she'd accede to 3 days alone in the woods with him. He wondered what she must be thinking, seeing all the letters slandering the good name of Lord White Rose posted throughout the city. The huntsman held up a hand for the other servants to ready their leashes. He looked up at Elias for the signal. The very forest held its breath. Elias dipped his head and dug his heels into his courser's flanks. He lurched past the huntsman, his falling hand a blur, and thundered between the trees into the clearing. He caught a glimpse of the hart, standing there stock still for half an instant at the edge of the pool, the drum beat of the hunter's horses vibrating in its hooves. Then, with speed that belied its size, it bolted into the trees in a blinding white flash like a quarrel from the hand crossbow that was slapping against his horse's flank. Elias hunched low to his courser's neck and spurred him on, savoring the wind clawing at his face. Out of the corner of his eye, he glimpsed the hunting dogs keeping pace with him, their long, wiry frames bounding between shrubs and over protruding tree roots, tongues lolling. Save for the hand crossbow and a knife sheathed on his chest through a belt looped around his shoulder, Elias was unarmed. Only rangers and peasants hunted with bows. Half the glory of the game was in the ritual. Once they ran the stag to the edge of exhaustion, they'd corner it with their dogs and horses. Then White Rose would take his hand in a halfer, presently strapped to Gil's saddle, and avoiding the monster's hooves and horns, he'd fell the beast and dismember it from snout to tail. Then back to camp for singing and drinking like sailors at port, with more carousing in every sleepy little hamlet from here to the keep like a drunken whirlwind. It was all great fun. He kept his gaze trained on the white shape flitting between the trees as the golden light spilling through the canopy faded to the gray-blue of twilight. He hardly noticed Cabot and Riley thundering on either side of him, the same formation in which they'd cut through nation raiders like a scythe through wheat. They both had longbows slung across their backs, not for deer, but for wolves. Like the sword, his own bow was being held by Gil. He was gaining on it. Even in the failing light, he could see the little clods of dirt being kicked up by the hart's hooves. He could smell the wake of fear trailing behind it as he closed the distance between them. He was standing in his stirrups, one hand curled in the black mane of his courser so he wouldn't be pitched from the saddle if the horse cut a sharp turn. He didn't spot the gully until the hart was already flying past it. Thankfully, his horse did, his hooves skidding right up to the edge of the ravine, sending rocks and clumps of grass skittering into the creek below. Even with his hand twisted into his mane, Elias nearly went nose first into the gully over the head of his courser. He wouldn't have believed the jump if he hadn't seen it for himself. It was easily 20 feet from one side of the ravine to the other, maybe more. It wasn't very deep, and the creek was only a few feet wide, but the few minutes it would take to get the dogs and the horses across might as well be a lifetime. His two men-at-arms fell in alongside him at the edge of the ravine, his bald servant trotting up behind them. "Shit luck, that," said Riley, scratching his chin as they watched the white hart disappearing between the trees. Cabot put a hand on his shoulder. "It's all right, me lord," he rumbled. "We'll pick up the trail tomorrow." Tomorrow. There was always tomorrow. Unless some other huntsman better esteemed by fortune caught a glimpse of the hart between then and now, or if the huntsman and his limer couldn't pick up the scent come morning, or if the damned stag simply outran them again. He thought about the keep and the lords and the hunt. It'd be worse than not going at all if he came back empty-handed. "No," he heard himself say. "Give me my bow." He looked back. Gil hadn't moved. "My bow. Give me my bow." Flecks of spittle sprayed the pig-nosed little oaf. He fumbled with the quiver and dumped the arrows onto the muddy ground as he passed it to Elias. White Rose curled his hand tight around the horn of his saddle to keep from backhanding him. All of them had horns in their packs or strapped to their saddles in case they needed to communicate across a distance. Elias touched his as he kicked his courser toward the lip of the gully. "I'll blow this when he's dead," he told them, ignoring their disbelief. He dug his heels cruelly into his courser's flanks before the great stupid beast would go over the edge of the ravine. Loose-packed mud and scree sheeted down the slope into the creek as Elias splashed across and over the opposite ridge. He swept his gaze across the tree-choked semi-darkness, his face flushed, breath hissing between his teeth. The hart had shrunk to a bare white smudge in the distance, almost blue in the fading light. There wasn't time to waste. If he lost the stag as evening fell, there'd be no finding it again, to say nothing of his finding his way back to camp. He flicked the reins and ran it down. The hart didn't even move. They must have already run it to the point of collapse, for Elias closed the gap between them easily. Ropey spittle dangled from his lips and fell in white gobs from his horse's open mouth. Something was wrong. The white hart still didn't turn tail, even as the 5 furlongs between them became 3 and 3 became 1. It was half hidden by bushes, and it wasn't until Elias burst into the clearing like a soul from the void that he saw why. The reason why the hart stood there like a rotting tree stump was because that's what it was. The dead sycamore was as thick as one of the massive ton barrels of honey and cooking oil that they kept in the cellars of the keep. One duplicitous limb still protruded from the stump. It grew out at an angle and ended in a cluster of twigs like the rack on a stag. His temper was terrible. His boot heels squelched in the marshy ground as he strode over to the stump. The jutting branch was too high to plant his boot against, so he hooked his hands around the twiggy end and gave it all his weight until it broke with a great splintering crack. He landed on his back in the mud, and he lay there for a while, feeling the wet seep through his cloak and into his hair. When he got up, his horse was looking at him quizzically. Elias ignored him and fumbled for the tiny drawstring pouch looped around his neck that he'd tucked under his clothes. He was dead on his feet, and the quick sniff of spice set his heart thudding with borrowed life. He was still angry, but for the moment his anger was subsumed by the sudden surge of euphoria that flooded his senses. He was scowling and grinning. He opened his eyes, and there was the heart. He didn't believe it. It was too easy. The stag was standing there, larger than life, as big as his courser, not 10 paces out from the edge of the clearing, with the evening mist swirling around its fetlocks. Elias ran his knuckles over his eyes, just to be sure it wasn't a trick of the light or some fantastical vision brought on by fatigue and the spice. It was still there. He counted 14 points on those massive antlers. He hunched down behind his horse. By Siren Providence, deer didn't seem as frightened by four-legged beasts as they were by those with two. And he reached for his bow, which he'd thrown down in disgust when he dismounted. He drew an arrow from his quiver, pausing to straighten a crease in its fletching, and wiped the crusted mud on his breeches. He knocked the arrow and slunk from behind his courser's flank. The heart still hadn't moved. Elias forced himself to breathe long and slow as he raised his bow and drew back the shot, aiming for the soft flesh behind the stag's shoulders where lay its liver and lungs. Who gave a damn, really, if he took it by sword or by arrow? The phrase he'd found himself saying too many times out on campaign came to mind, and he suppressed a smirk tugging at the edge of his lip. Dead was dead. He drew the arrow back those last two precious inches and let fly. It wasn't until later that he put together the pieces of what happened next. There was a crack like thunder, and the bow exploded in his hands. He felt lightning streak across his hand and his face. He was blind, with blood sluicing down his face into his open, snarling mouth. Elias didn't wait to collect himself. He threw down the bow and ripped the hand crossbow off his hip in one motion, blinking blood out of his eyes as he leveled it at the white heart and squeezed the lever. The hornet whistled through the fog and thumped into the earth somewhere out of sight. Where the white heart had been standing, there was only an ingot of moonlight slanting through a gap in the canopy overhead. Through vision rapidly blurring from the blood dripping into his eyes, he made out the stag bounding through the trees as quick as thought. Going, going, gone. It was full dark when he stormed into the camp, his face crusted with dried mud and blood. He could hear singing from a half mile out, and he followed the orange light of the bonfire slashing between the trees. He'd been fuming for hours, his black fantasies lent extra violence by the 5 grains of spice thrumming in his bloodstream. It was near enough of the yellow powder to kill a man. Cabot came to greet him as White Rose materialized from the outer gloom. He wore a toothy grin brought on by the half-empty wineskin slung around his neck. When he caught a glimpse of the murder on Elias's face, his smirk faltered, and he threw up a hasty salute to the nobleman as Elias stormed past. Riley was strumming his mandolin, a knot of servants and lordlings clustered around him, joining in the refrain as he led them in his clear, strong tenor that Elias had followed through the darkness. His fingers found a burr in the music when he saw White Rose, and a cold hush fell over the revelers. The huntsman was hunched next to the bonfire, feeding morsels from the brace of rabbits he had spitted over the flames to the limer curled up at his feet. He'd washed his face, although there was still a patina of mud crusted around his temples, and his brilliant green eyes found Elias through the dancing flames. He felt all their eyes on him, and he didn't care. Gil was splitting wood a few paces out from the others, his back to the bonfire. As the music faltered, he turned toward them with his arms piled high with firewood, just in time to see the narrow end of Elias's broken bow swishing out of the darkness. The servant howled and fell back into the woodpile, the logs in his arms scattering like ninepins. Immediately, Elias was on top of him, whipping him with savage abandon about the chest and face with his bow. He tried in vain to shield himself with his arms. Elias was without mercy. The others looked on in horror and disgust, but no one said a word in defense of the lordling's servant. Elias beat him until the narrow end of the bow snapped and dangled from the shaft by a few bloody fibers. He drew the knife from his belt. He heard the other's breath catch. "A bow that won't shoot is just a rod," he growled, not looking at Gil, who lay sprawled motionless on the woodpile. He sawed through the fibers and caught the narrow end of the broken bow as it fell. It was 5 inches long and shiny black with the servant's blood, still with a foot of catgut from the broken string hanging off the end. He threw it down at him. "Wear that around your neck," he commanded him. Then, without waiting to see if his order was followed, he wasn't even sure that Gil was still conscious, he marched into his tent and threw down the flap, and didn't come out until morning. We'll be right back. thank you guys so much for listening. It is always a privilege to be able to share this story with you. As always, it is a huge favor if you leave a like or a comment on the video, or if you're listening on podcasts, you can do me a favor and leave a 5-star review. That really allows this story to reach as many people as possible. All right, that is enough from me. I will catch you guys next week. See you then.